First statement is simply this. Let me give you this statement. As I mentioned already, that we have danger sometimes of misunderstanding and misplacing certain things. As I mentioned last week, I believe one of the reasons we haven't had even a minor split in this church is because when I hear things, I confront it. And the best thing you could ever do if you misunderstand something your preacher says, just come talk to me. I've been here a long time. I'm not going to bite you. And yes, I preach with passion, but I'm not a mean guy outside the pulpit. Ask my wife. I'm a big teddy bear, aren't I, babe? Literally, emphasis on big. I mean, a big teddy bear. And I hate sometimes when I hear about people being offended or upset at something. And so many times, I just found out about somebody that was offended about something that happened years ago. And I was like, wow, it was a blatant misunderstanding. They would have just talked with somebody about it. We could have solved it just like that. David sends some people with a good motive, but it gets misinterpreted. And by the way, the king made a big mistake. He listened to his assistants. And that happens a lot of times in churches too. Something is directed toward you, but the next thing you know, you're talking to your friends, and they put thoughts in your mind that aren't true, and you start having division. It happens in marriages. I'm premarital counseling Lance and Katie, and I've already told them both. Listen, the worst thing you can do when you get married is to tell your parents when you've had a fight. You fix it. My wife and I have been married almost 20 years, and we've had 2 fights in 20 years. No, I'm just kidding. We've had more than that. She just won't see why I'm right. But anyway, she misunderstands me all the time. Just kidding. But my parents can testify. They've never known of a fight we've had. I've never called my mom and dad and said, hey, Janelle's acting weird again. Help me. You don't do that. You don't do that. She doesn't call her mom and dad and say, well, you know how Randy is. I mean, you don't do that. You fix it. You fix it. We can fix it. We're adults, right? And then I have time. I hadn't told you that, Lance and Katie. And if I've counseled anybody in premarital counseling, I'll say that. You fix it. You don't need to call mom and daddy in, because guess which side they're going to pick? They're going to pick the son-in-law side, because he's always right. Just kidding. But the fact is, we need to learn how to fix things. And this is my workbench. All right? And I have tools. My tools are words. And I was thinking one time, I'll never forget, Brother Phil Skipper taught me this years ago when he's pastoring still in Holt Summit. He said, when a plumber forgets the wrong tool, he just walks back to his toolbox and picks up a different tool and goes back and fixes it. When a construction worker picks up the wrong tool. Unfortunately for preachers, our tools are words. So once we say those words, we can't go back and take a different word that we didn't mean to say. You know what I mean? So our tools are words. And so if there's misunderstandings, let's fix it. Fix it, okay? Because the Bible will point out over and over and over again that the devil loves to misconstrue things and twist things and make it different than what it really was supposed to be. God gave Adam a clear message. And Adam told Eve, I think Adam took it a whole different level because he knew she was a woman and she liked to go shopping. So he said, don't even touch the fruit. God said, don't eat of the fruit, but he said, don't even touch it. Remember, you tell your kids, don't touch anything in the store, just look at it, right? Adam said, Eve, don't even touch the fruit, right? But Eve tells the devil, we're not even supposed to touch it. What does the devil do? He twists the words. He changed the message. The next thing you know, Eve is taking a bite of the fruit, and then Adam does, and here we are today. So number one, a preacher's passion sometimes will supersede his principles. His passion will supersede his principles. I don't think anybody would question Paul's desire to help people. Probably nobody in that day wanted to help people more than the Apostle Paul. But Paul allowed his passion to take over his principle in this particular passage. And I can testify many times in my life, I try to be a man that lives by principles, but many times my passion will take over my principles. And sometimes they feed off each other, really, because principles sometimes need to be pushed aside because passion needs to take over. Can I tell you something? A lot of times we take for granted our founding fathers who became so passionate about something. They were willing to lay aside everything they had and believed in for the cause of freedom. We still enjoy the blessings of that today. So Paul had a principle to help people, but you'll see in Acts chapter 15, verse 38, but Paul thought not good to take him with him who departed from them in Pamphylia and went not with him to the work. So Paul is allowing his passion to take over. Paul should have said, yeah, let's help Mark out. Maybe they could have had a reasonable conversation and agreed that, Barnabas, you just take Mark. But instead, it became a passionate dispute. And sometimes when passion supersedes principles goes out the door. I heard a statement a long time ago. It's a great statement. Words spoken in anger are rarely from the heart. That's a great quote. It's a good truth. There's a lot of truth to that. Because in this particular passage, Paul shows that he allowed passion to supersede his principles. And again, that's not always bad, but sometimes it is. And it gets misunderstood. This is an interesting passage of scripture that me and my preacher friends have discussed many times through the years, wondering what we can learn from that. Because when you're in the ministry any length of time, you will have disagreements. Hey, can I tell you something? I'm even an open book. I've had some disagreements with preachers out there. I've had preachers get mad at me over certain things. I've had preachers misunderstand something I said, and then I didn't know about it, and they called me, and we fixed it. You know, when you're an alpha male and you deal with other alpha males, guess what? Sometimes you're going to have conflicts. All right? It's just the way life is. But look, don't be so afraid of confrontation that it causes something worse. Bitterness to grow and grow and grow. Confrontation cut off right at the head. All right? So number one, watch out for that. Passion takes over principle. Preachers do that. Right, number two, sometimes I have a struggle between fire and frustration. Fire and frustration. Somebody asked me now several years ago, I said, hey, Brother Randy, do you ever get depressed or discouraged? And I said, I don't get depressed. And discouraged, nah, I don't know. So I asked my wife that question. She gave me a really wise statement. She said, I don't think you ever get discouraged, but you get frustrated with things. Ah, the wisdom of a wife. And I believe you see that in the same passage here. Paul was so fired up. Look at Paul's fire here in Acts chapter 15, verse 36. And some days after, Paul said unto Barnabas, let us go again. By the way, look at this phrase, and some days after. After what? How many days? How many days did they take off before Paul said, let's go again? I mean, Paul was a driven, ambitious man. Paul wanted to do more for God than anybody alive in that day. It wasn't even a competition. He even tells us in, I believe in the book of Corinthians, that he labored more abundantly than all his disciples. He knew they compared notes. He was an alpha male. Paul didn't have a problem saying, oh, you can sleep 4 hours a night? I sleep 3 hours a night. What you got on that, right? And men are like that sometimes. And so he says, let's go again. Look at verse 36. Let's go again and visit our brethren in every city where we have preached the word of the Lord and see how they do. And Barnabas agreed, but Barnabas had determined to take Mark. And Paul is so fired up about going again. And Paul knows Barnabas is reliable. And Paul's ready for him and Barnabas to go take off. And then he's just fired up about this. But his frustration comes out. He was obviously very frustrated by Mark's departure some time before. Years ago, I was preaching on hell here. And I got very upset at the lack of response to the invitation. And I threw the microphone down and left the building. I don't know if you remember that. I was mad. I'll never forget that evening, Brother Samson came up to me and says, preacher, sometimes you forget. God's been working on your heart for a whole week, but that was the first time we heard that message, and we weren't quite ready to respond like you wanted us to. Great, kind rebuke to me. It wasn't mean. I wasn't offended by it. I was younger, and I realized, you're right. I had been thinking about that message for a whole week, and I came up here expecting y'all to be as fired up about it as I was, and you weren't, so I got frustrated. Watch this now. My frustration superseded my fire, and I missed out on an opportunity to be a blessing. In fact, that same day, I got 2-3 phone calls that afternoon. Are you resigning? Are you leaving us? No. I just got mad, okay? Preachers can get mad sometimes, all right? But you see there, Paul does the same thing here. And he gets mad. Paul, verse 38, thought not good to take him with him, who departed from them. Look at what happens in verse 39. And the contention was so sharp. He literally got in a fight. Paul said, my fire for this trip, fine, forget it. They butt heads. They had a huge, huge falling out because Paul allowed his frustration to take over his fire. And sometimes preachers are guilty of that. You can see that throughout the Bible. The other leaders in the Bible, that the same situation happened. Number three, all right, this question was asked by a kid. Why are you always mad, right? Anger sometimes takes over my admonishment. Admonishment. Admonishment is a beautiful biblical word. It means to sometimes get in your face. Hey, it's my job as a father to admonish my kids. It means I'm here to tell them things that I'm concerned about, things that I've seen already in somebody else's life, and I'm trying to protect you from it. Look at 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 14. 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 14. Paul says this in 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 14, a great verse here. I want you to turn there so you can see it yourself here. 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 14. I often get asked that, especially by children or parents will say, hey, my kid came to church first time. They want to know why you're mad all the time. I'm not mad. See, I try to smile as I preach because that shows you're not mad, right? But the fact is I get so passionate, sometimes it comes across as anger. But let me tell you something. I do. Watch this now. Your preacher does preach mad many times. I'm not mad at you. I'm mad at the devil. I preach with an outrageous anger sometimes at the devil. Sometimes because I know something happened this last week that you'll never know about. Another one of our sheep got hurt bad. Another one of our sheep in this fold went astray. Another one of our sheep, something happened to them, and you won't know about it, but I know about it, and it comes across as anger, and I really meant to admonish you. Sometimes you will sit there and you think, oh, he's just preaching at me because of something that happened recently. That's not true. A lot of times I preach certain messages, certain things because of something that happened 2 or 3 years ago, but I see a pattern coming up again, and God lays it on my heart, and I want to be admonishing, but sometimes it teeters back and forth between anger and admonishment. Look at 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 14. Paul says this, I write not these things to shame you, but as my beloved sons, I warn you. There's a reason God calls the church the sheep. Some preachers say it's because sheep are the dumbest animals in the world. I don't think that's necessary. I don't think that was God's intent to be insulting to the church. Preachers have said that. The reason God called them sheep is because sheep are the dumbest animals in the world. And if you ask Tim Klink, he's at Pleasant Ridge tonight. Of course, you know he's building their church. They have an event going on tonight. But Brother Tim has told me many times, he agrees, sheep are dumb. They're dumb animals. But I don't think that's the reason God called the church sheep, because they're the dumbest animals. I think he called them sheep because sheep need a shepherd. That's the purpose of it. And look, I am not your shepherd. He is. But God has placed me here to point you to him. And sometimes God lays on your preacher's heart things that have to be addressed. And you might leave this building thinking, boy, preacher sure was angry. And I teeter on that back and forth of admonishing, being blunt about something. But then sometimes I veer off into the anger land. By the way, let me say this. Anger is not a sin. Anger is an emotion God gave to us. And I say to you tonight that there's times we all should be angry about things. I'm angry at how Hollywood is teaching our children about the wickedness of the lifestyle of immorality. I mean, it's wicked. I'm angry about the liquor crowd, how they advertise on TV and billboards as having the drunk life is just a wonderful life. It's a party life. And they show you all these models and everything's going good, but they don't show the heartbreaks and the car wrecks and people dying and homes being busted up because of liquor. I'm angry about that. I'm really angry that the devil's lying to so many people. I tell you, I'm going to be blunt tonight. I get angry every time the Pope comes to America. Because the Pope stands up and preaches to 100,000 people in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and I sit there and I read these articles and think, let me talk to those people. Give me 15 minutes with those people. They'll hear more truth than the Pope would give them in 3 hours. Not because I'm better than the Pope, but I know the truth, and the truth has set me free. I get angry about those things. But sometimes I allow the anger to begin to take the place of the purpose of admonishment. And that's where I have to be careful, and that's where sometimes I apologize for that. For all these 19 years of doing that sometimes. Paul allowed his anger. The Bible doesn't tell us what he says to Mark after this all happens. But I'm pretty sure when Paul left, it wasn't really good terms for him and Barnabas. The contention was so sharp and they immediately parted ways. Let me say this, the Bible doesn't tell us this, but I do believe because Paul applauds Mark in the latter part of his life, I do believe things were made right eventually. Let me say this, sometimes your passion and your anger will take over, make sure eventually you get things right. It's like marriage. Marriage, sometimes you get angry at your spouse. I've given that woman many reasons to get angry at me. I'm glad she forgives me, and we get back together, and we smooch, and we move on, amen? It's a lot like the relationships in the church, too, amen? So number one, the teetering between passion and principle. Number two, fire and frustration. Number three, anger and admonishment. Number four, motivation versus meaning or intent, meaning. A lot of times, what preachers mean to say is misunderstood by what they were motivated to say. I think you see that again in the same passage of the Apostle Paul. Paul's motivation and his intent was to go back and minister to people and be a blessing to scores of people, and he was just excited about it. He was motivated by that. But Barnabas had a different perspective on Paul's motivation. And I think if you were to ask Paul later, Paul would confess that he didn't mean to do what he did. He didn't mean to do that. But he lost himself in the moment of his motivation. But I don't think anybody here would debate this fact that Paul was probably one of the most driven men that ever lived. He was a driven man. Even before he was saved, he was driven for the cause of Judaism, for the religion of Israel. He was a driven man. He wanted to destroy every Christian on the planet at that time. But thank God he met Jesus. And Jesus just picked him up and turned him around, and he got driven in a totally different direction. And his drive is so powerful and so passionate that 2,000 years later, we're still being affected by Paul. We still are. we still experience the blessings of reading and studying and adhering to his epistles. Isn't that a blessing? I thank God for that, and I thank God for the fact that he was such a motivated man, but many times I think we misunderstand his meaning. As he even writes in the epistle sometimes, he expresses that sometimes, listen, I want to make sure you understand where I'm coming from here. He's an open book. That's one of the reasons I love the Pauline epistles. Of all the books of the Bible, it's the most you see inside the personality of a man, with the exception of some Psalms that are written by David. You actually get to see inside the thoughts and hearts of this great man of God, and to understand, oh, that's what he meant. That's why he did what he did. Because his motivation sometimes didn't give clarity to his meaning, but sometimes when you give a man a chance to explain the meaning of his motivation, he understands it a whole lot better. All right, number five, and I'm done. Loud and love. Loud and love. All right, Acts chapter 15, verse 39. I'm just about through. Look at Acts chapter 15, verse 39. And the contention was so sharp between them that they departed asunder one from the other. And so Barnabas took Mark and sailed to Cyprus, and Paul chose Silas, and they went their way. All right? Look at 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 11. 2 Timothy chapter 4 and verse number 11. 2 Timothy chapter 4 and verse number 11. Paul is about to pass. And the Bible doesn't tell us this, but history says that Paul was beheaded at the hands of the Roman soldiers. There is a story circulating. I've looked it up, and I haven't found it to be disproven, that the Roman soldier that beheaded him was so impressed by his testimony, he handed the axe to another soldier and said, I want to go where he's going. He was beheaded right after Paul was beheaded. So that part of the story is still questionable for debate, but we know Paul died a martyr's death. God hedged him about for many years. Paul should have been dead many times. Paul was abused many times. Paul was thrown in prison many times. Paul was left for dead more than once. Paul was shipwrecked out in the middle of the ocean, in the middle of the night. Nikki and her family were like an hour from the ocean this week and never went to the ocean. How? How can you miss out on that? That's just not right. I'm almost crying about that. I'm bitter. Just kidding. But Paul was, Matt, can you imagine just floating in the ocean in dark, all these millions of animals underneath you, and just, well, anytime someone can chomp a leg off and I'll bleed to death right here in the ocean, right? But I mean, Paul had been there. He'd been through everything. And he's about to near his death now. And look what he says about Mark in 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 11. He says, only Luke is with me. Many believe Luke was with him because his health was failing. Luke was a doctor, and Luke was taking care of him. Look what he says in verse 11. Take Mark and bring him with thee. Who's he talking to? He's talking to Timothy, a younger preacher, about Mark, who we don't know how much younger he is than Paul, but he's younger than Paul and probably a bit older than Timothy. He says, take Mark and bring him with thee, for he is profitable, watch what he says, to me for the ministry. It's a blessing to know that the great apostle Paul wasn't ashamed to say, I was wrong. Now, what's it got to do with anything? Let me just say this. When our children are in danger, when your kids were little and they ran out in the middle of the street, sometimes your love compelled you to be loud. You yell at that child, get out of the road! And you know what? You don't worry about who's watching. You don't care who's listening. All of a sudden, your love compelled you to get loud about something. Let me tell you, I believe if love is measured by loudness here, I think all these years of me being loud has proven the love I have for this church. The love I have for your people. Because, and I'm not saying that's for every preacher. Some preachers aren't loud, and that's fine. They love in a different way. But I express that love by the loudness I give, the passion I have. And I often joke and say, the reason I yell so loud is so my parents maybe can hear me preaching someday, but they haven't heard me. Dad can't hear me. My mom and sister can't hear me. Sometimes they can hear me when I yell real loud, all right? Not tonight, though. You can't hear me tonight. She can't hear me right now, all right? So, but the fact is I get loud because of the love I have for the Lord and the love I have for the church. And so when your kid asks, is he mad? We say, no. He's just reminding us that he loves us. Just remind us that he loves us. So tonight I want to challenge all of us, and as there's some things pastors want to tell their church, and this came up a little bit. Some of my preacher friends emailed me and said, or texted me and said, sometimes I wish my church would understand the motive of my passion, understand my vision, understand my desires, and maybe get on board more. And sometimes we don't communicate it good enough. But tonight I want you to understand that sometimes my passion takes over my principle. My frustration takes over my fire. My anger takes over my admonishment. My motivation misexplains my meaning, And finally, sometimes I just go so loud because I love you so much. So I hope tonight we can understand a little bit and learn that from the lesson of the Apostle Paul. Thank you for listening. Heads bowed, eyes are closed. Thank you.
Looking for someone to fill an empty place, to live a life of holiness and defy the world's embrace, to count all gain as loss for the glory of the cross, a city on a hill for everyone to see. Filled with glory, but I had to step aside when I heard the song arise. It made the Father smile to see his child step forth and start to sing.
Redeemed, I am redeemed. The greatest song this mortal tongue can.
Softly singing, and every hand was raised. The preacher made his final plea to every heart that would believe. Then a hush fell on that place when a sinner felt his grace. The saints and angels did rejoice when that child began to lift his voice.
Redeemed, I am redeemed.
was guilty with nothing to say. And they were coming to take me away. Then a voice from heaven was heard that said, "Let her go, take me instead." And I should have been crucified. I should have suffered and died. I should have hung on the cross in disgrace. But Jesus, God's Son, took my place. Crown of thorns, the spear deep in his side, and the pain, it should have been mine. The rusty nails were meant for me, but yet Christ took them and he let me go free. I should have been crucified. I should have suffered and died. I should have hung on the cross in disgrace. But Jesus, God's Son, took my place. I should have been crucified. I should have suffered and died. I should have hung on the cross in disgrace. But Jesus, God's Son.